Serial Killing, a podcast, is researched, written, produced, and hosted by me, Alyssa Carroll. This is an independent production, no network, no contracts, and I need your support. Please subscribe, follow on my socials linked below, or go to my Patreon to show your support. Thank you so much.
From about 15 years on up, a great deal of my thoughts were basically unshareable.
We are all evil in some form or another. Yes, I am not 100%, but I am evil.
My mother was a sick, angry, hungry, and very sad woman. I hated her, but I wanted to love my mother.
This is Serial Killing, a podcast.
Hello again, and welcome to Serial Killing, a podcast, where we sometimes veer off the serial killer path to delve into other topics within our beloved true crime community. Special thanks to my patrons who voted for this episode and who get early access to each podcast, so thank you so much. You are truly appreciated. Today's podcast was voted for by patrons and will be on the filmed unaliving, if you will, of stalker Ricardo Lopez. So let's jump right in. So Ricardo Lopez was born on January 14th, 1975 in Montevideo, Uruguay, in central kind of southern South America, East Coast, kind of across the bay from Buenos Aires. So as we do, let's look at just a bit of history for the year of his birth. What might his mother have been exposed to with regards to the news or anything that might have affected the fetus? In the UK in 1975, inflation continued to spiral out of control, reaching about 24.2%. The price of gasoline increased by nearly 70% in 1 year, but the US began to see a start back down, with the U.S. inflation going down to 9.2%. Margaret Thatcher became the leader of the opposition for the Conservative Party in the U.K. She was the first woman to be a prime minister just a few years later. This is also the year that the Vietnam War officially ended. The U.S. then carried out Vietnam's kind of, quote, Operation Baby Lift, bringing Vietnamese orphans to the U.S. Also, one of the very first blockbuster films, Jaws, was also released this year. And at the time of its release, it had become the highest-grossing film of all time. The plot revolved around a killer shark terrorizing a small town and those who would hunt it. It was nominated for several Academy Awards and won 3 of them. Also known for its dramatic score, or the music, right, superior editing, and suspenseful premise. Well, the film Jaws is considered by many critics to be one of the greatest films ever made. So newspaper heiress Patty Hearst was found in a San Francisco apartment and arrested for armed robbery in 1975. This is kind of a famous case. If you want me to cover it, leave a comment or let me know. Patty Hearst. So she had been kidnapped in Berkeley, California the year before. And she went on to send letters to the media stating that she was joining the leftist group SLA, or the Symbionese Liberation Army, and of course of her own free will. Later that month, a surveillance camera took a photo of her participating in an armed robbery of a San Francisco bank, making her a wanted criminal by the FBI. This would be the famous case of that would at least bring light to Stockholm Syndrome, which, again, I can cover in maybe a true crime science, whatever you want me to do, you guys let me know. So the Green March, with 350,000 unarmed Moroccans, crossed the border into the Spanish-controlled area of Western Sahara, demanding the return of the Moroccan Sahara Desert. King Faisal of Saudi Arabia was assassinated this year. Cod War breaks out between Britain and Iceland when Iceland extended its fishing rights to about 200 miles. Dutch elm disease destroyed more than 3 million elm trees in the UK. The UK implemented the Sex Discrimination and Equal Pay Act, And Jimmy Hoffa, the Jimmy Hoffa, ex-Teamsters boss, disappeared, never to be seen again. Some other famous people born in 1975 were Angelina Jolie, Tiger Woods, and Kate Winslet. So, you know, there were some more stressful things going on during the year of his birth. And I also find it noteworthy that Uruguay, in and of itself, was dealing with its own kind of things during that time. Their government at that time was a civic military dictatorship. That was from 73 to 85, also known as the Uruguayan dictatorship. It was an authoritarian military dictatorship that ruled Uruguay for 12 years, ending in 1985. The dictatorship has been the subject of a lot of controversy due to its violations of human rights, use of torture, and the unexplained disappearances of many Uruguayans. Hope I said that right. And so I didn't really have any, like, firm proof. I have a feeling that this was maybe a bigger contributing factor for Ricardo's family to leave Uruguay and immigrate to the U.S. Now, some sources said that he immigrated to the U.S. with one of his big brothers and that the parents stayed in Uruguay. There were a couple of sources that said the parents came with. I couldn't verify which one was 100% correct, so either way, he came to the United States from Uruguay, either with a brother or the family in general, okay? So they had been a middle-class family in their home country, so as an infant and very small child, he wasn't particularly poor, and he would have been considered at least decently, I wouldn't say well off, but you know, maybe, you know, on the lower side of comfortable. And then when he was 2 years old, they landed, settled in the metro area of Atlanta, Georgia, and it was said they lived a quiet, middle-class life there as well. And another kind of really frustrating thing is that I really could not find out anything much about his family at all. I know he had two older brothers. When Ricardo was born, his mother was nearly 40 years old. So keep that in mind, too. And he has one brother named George, who I could at least verify was 14 when Ricardo was born. And then the oldest brother was 18 when he was born. I couldn't find the oldest brother's name. So there is a considerable age gap. 18 and 14, they were 4 years apart. And then 14 years later, Ricardo, mom was around 40. I also have no idea if he had sisters, but he certainly didn't speak of any in his video diaries, okay? Now, I'm sure the information exists out there, and I just couldn't find it in the time that I had to dig, but all sources say that he did have a great relationship with his family, and especially so with his mother. Anyone who had anything to say about him said that he was a nice kid. He was well-behaved. He was self-entertained, but quiet, introverted. Ricardo would, in his video diary, state that his childhood was normal and really nothing out of the ordinary happened. There was no mention anywhere from anyone that he displayed any issues as a child other than just being introverted and keeping to himself, which, same, honestly. One thing Ricardo realized in his youth was that he absolutely loved art. He actually dreamed of being a famous artist someday. He mentioned that he had fully intended on applying for art schools, but said later he realized that it was just a pipe dream. At least he felt that it was just a pipe dream for him. And at 16 years old, sources stated, he dropped out of high school. So the few friends he had, they all said that he was this easygoing but shy, introverted guy, and especially so with girls. As far as all the information I could find, plus Ricardo said it in his tapes, that he'd never had a girlfriend in school. Not female friends, not a girlfriend, nada, okay? And I hate to say it, but that's really all I could find about his childhood. One thing that a few sources said about him that stands out is that Ricardo had Klinefelter syndrome. So, what the heck is that? I briefly brought it up in the Richard Speck podcast, but, you know, let's talk about it. I think it's super relevant in this case. The NHS describes Klinefelter syndrome as, quote, where boys and men are born with an extra X chromosome. In female babies, they are born with the XX chromosomes, and the boys are born with the XY chromosome. And then if you've been following me for a while, that also sort of ties into that warrior gene, the variant on the MAOA gene, where boys have, girls have an XX, right? And so the warrior gene or the MAOA gene, that can be somewhat of a predictor of violence, if you will. A girl will get an X from a mom. You can only inherit this MAOA variant on the moms, through the moms. So mom's got an X, and dad gives the daughter an X. Two X's, the dad kind of, you know, dilutes it, if you will. And with boys, they get the X from the mom and a Y from the dad. So they don't have that X from the dad that sort of dilutes that variant, that warrior gene variant. Okay, so that's why we have this exponentially higher percentage of boys that are serial killers and just extremely dangerous and violent offenders. Okay, but when it comes to Klinefelter syndrome, the boys are born with the extra X chromosome, right? So boys and men with Klinefelter syndrome are still genetically male and often will not even realize that they have this extra chromosome. But occasionally it can cause problems that require treatment. Now, usually it isn't diagnosed until adulthood. Klinefelter syndrome may adversely affect testicular growth, resulting in smaller than normal testicles, which can lead to lower production of testosterone. The syndrome may also cause reduced muscle mass, reduced body and facial hair, and enlarged breast tissue. The effects of Klinefelter syndrome vary, and not everyone has the same signs and symptoms that have it. Most men with Klinefelter syndrome produce little or no sperm, but assisted reproductive procedures may make it possible for some men with Klinefelter syndrome to father children. This is all according to the Mayo Clinic. So the signs, you know, the symptoms of Klinefelter syndrome may vary quite a bit among males with the disorder. Many boys with Klinefelter syndrome show few or only mild signs. The condition may go undiagnosed until adulthood, as I said, or it may never be diagnosed. For others, the condition has a noticeable effect on growth and/or appearance. So again, signs and symptoms may vary by age. In babies, the disorder could manifest as weak muscles, slower motor development, meaning slower to sit up assisted or stand, you know, so on. There could also be speech delays, and they could be born with their testicles not descended into the scrotal sac. And then as they become boys and then on into adolescent teens, they could be taller than average, may have longer legs and shorter torsos, and even broader hips than the other boys. There could be absent or delayed puberty. Then once past the puberty phase, they might have less muscle or body and facial hair than other boys. They can have small testicles again, a much smaller than average penis, enlarged breast tissue, weak bones, and very low energy levels. And then kind of beyond just the physical stuff, they are also known to be much more shy and sensitive and have much more difficulty expressing their thoughts fully or be much more sensitive. And some have a higher degree of difficulty with reading, writing, or math. And then grown men, of course, could have greatly reduced or no sperm count, you know, the low sex drive, smaller penis or just smaller genitals in general. And on top of being smaller with broader hips and breast tissue, they tend to carry excess weight around their stomachs. And rest assured, this isn't an inherited condition. It happens randomly. I cannot express that enough. It's random. The risk of Klinefelter syndrome isn't increased by anything a parent does or does not do. For older mothers, the risk is higher, but only slightly. But we do know Ricardo's mother was about 40 when she had him. So I'm not saying that that had anything to do with anything, but, you know, it does sort of tick that one little box. So Klinefelter syndrome may increase the risk of, okay, here's your list, anxiety and depression, Social, emotional, and behavioral problems such as low self-esteem, emotional immaturity, and impulsiveness. Infertility and problems with sexual function. Weak bones or osteoporosis. Heart and blood vessel disease. Breast cancer and certain other cancers. Lung disease. Metabolic syndrome, which includes type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, hypertension, and high cholesterol and triglycerides, which is your hyperlipidemia. They could also have autoimmune disorders like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis, tooth and oral problems that make dental cavities more likely, and then here at the bottom it says autism spectrum disorder. That one was a little new to me, that one specifically. I was not totally aware of. So a number of complications caused by Klinefelter syndrome are related to low testosterone, which is your hypogonadism. Testosterone replacement therapy reduces the risk of certain health problems, especially when therapy is started at the beginning of puberty. So with this information, right, we can see that this could definitely explain some of his personality with regards to him being, you know, introverted and the awkwardness with girls and so on. And though I didn't watch like every second of all of the tapes, because that's like 18 to 22 hours of time, various forums all stated, and what I did watch, they all stated that he did have a smaller than average penis that he did show on camera. Y'all be my guest if you want to watch and verify that. I'll just take the internet's word for it for this, as odd as that sounds. Even though he's not even alive anymore, it just seems a little personal to me. He seems to have had the inferiority complex, at least according to his peers, but he did have a very small group of male friends. So that's all we have. There was no mention whatsoever of him being, you know, the usual list we do. He wasn't abused, he wasn't neglected in any way, and I really believe that. I think his parents, or at least the brothers, immigrated to the U.S. with the idea of a better life than the stupid political climate of his home country when he was born. He was raised middle class. It all seems very normal. It seems very average. Nothing stood out to me. There was some social awkwardness, again, the introversion, the awkwardness around girls, but really just the Klinefelter syndrome could also somewhat explain some of that. Okay, so outside of the Klinefelter syndrome, nothing jumped out at me as anything that would have affected him negatively in his childhood environment. So let's get back into the story. At 17 years old, Ricardo, who had these dreams of being an artist, didn't really seriously apply to any art schools because it was said that he had convinced himself that any art school he applied to would just simply reject him. And while his family and few male friends did describe him as having a good relationship / friendship with them, and that he was very easygoing, internally, well, it was just a whole other story. In his very late teens, he was living pretty vividly inside of his own head. After dropping out of high school, he moved from the Atlanta, Georgia kind of metro area to Hollywood, Florida, and began working with his brother in his brother's pest control business. It wasn't anything fancy, but it did pay the bills. So he kind of moved into this really small apartment because, of course, that was all that he could afford. And as you can imagine, the social awkwardness, no female friends, never a girlfriend, quite often living kind of in his own fantasies in his head, so on, got exponentially worse once he was living completely alone. And thus began his downward spiral. So in the very early 1990s, it was said that he became fixated on the actress Gina Davis. She was in Beetlejuice, Thelma and Louise. Most of you know who she is. He began to kind of obsess over her, but then he discovered that she was dating some other celebrity, and his fascination and focus on Gina kind of began to wane. And this was around the time that a young, beautiful little Icelandic female singer was rising up through the ranks of popularity, our beloved Bjork. Like the rest of us, or most of us, Ricardo happened to catch one of her songs or videos. He was at a friend's house and he became intrigued. Now, he did say that at first he found her music odd and quirky, and it was a bit different compared to the other music that was being released at the time, and it really was, to be fair, I remember. But that's what I loved about her personally. She was super unique. But her voice is so wholly unique, and her music equally so, that whether or not you loved or you disliked her music, you still found her fascinating. I liked her music personally. So here's a short little sample. And that was it. That was all it took. He was captivated by her. He admitted in his video diaries that he quickly developed a crush on her. He, of course, went out and purchased, you know, all of the music that she had released at the time, listened to it on repeat over and over, and thus the obsession with the young singer-songwriter began. So we all know those kind of black and white composition notebooks, right? Well, he bought some of those and he began keeping a journal about his obsession. Obsession turned into stalking. He wrote about himself in his journals over 800 pages, to be precise. But in his writings, Ricardo lamented about his perceived weaknesses, his frustrations, disappointments, anger, hatred, and his new intense love and obsession for Bjork. He wrote about unaliving himself and murder in general. Bjork, however, was most assuredly at the center of Ricardo's thoughts. He bought himself a video camera for his 21st birthday. He started recording videotape diaries in which he would chronicle not only his growing and more disturbing obsession, but to tell the tale through what would wind up being 11 two-hour tapes. The content depicts his sharp descent into depression and self-loathing, one that he just could not reconcile. So Ricardo usually filmed himself in his video diaries at night, very late at night, very wee hours of the morn. He was naked usually, or nearly so, and it becomes painfully obvious pretty quickly that he felt, and kind of was, utterly alone. I'll link a YouTube video in the notes if you want to see some clips of the videos, but be warned, he throws the hard N word referring to people of color, so here's your warning. Now, in one video, he speaks about the camera being his mirror that he speaks to, voices his thoughts and his wants, and even says this is his own psychologist. So that's interesting. And really, as he speaks to the camera, he really does have some incredible insight into his obsession with Bjork, stating quite plainly that he was obsessed with her. He was fully aware of it. And then we learn pretty quickly that he started the video recording as he found out that Bjork had started dating a man that went by the name of Goldie. But who's Goldie? I didn't know. Turns out he was a pretty well-known British music producer who was sought after by artists for his jungle, drum, and bass, and something called breakbeat hardcore style, which is interesting. And other talents, of course. He was an actor. He starred in Guy Ritchie's Snatch. He starred in the 007 movie The World Is Not Enough. And, you know, he just happened to be a black man. And Bjork had briefly dated another black man before Goldie named Tricky, and he looked familiar to me. But this is where we learn that Ricardo was a horrific racist. He creeps up very, you know, he's talking into the camera and he just kind of creeps up very close to the camera and he says, "She's fucking a," and then he throws that hard inward. He repeats himself where only his mouth and his teeth are in frame. He surprisingly doesn't blame Goldie at all. He specifically says that it's Bjork's fault. And thus, he tells us, the viewers, that he began this video diary to specifically document his plans and, quote, progression to the events, end quote. So he gives us a glimpse into his living conditions, which weren't spectacular. The apartment itself looked to be, inhabitable. You don't get to see a whole lot of it, but what is there seems decent. But even he commented on how he lived there and he didn't really pick up or clean. But what's really sad is that he speaks horribly about himself, referring to himself as dirty, filthy, fat, and he calls himself a piece of shit a lot. To be honest, it was a little heartbreaking to hear him talk about himself in such a way. In fact, he specifically said that the reason why he wasn't interested in finding a girlfriend was because he was a, quote, piece of shit. He tells the camera, he tells us in the camera, that he didn't want an intimate relationship with Bjork, not super sexual, at least for the most part, because he was, quote, no good for that. He just wanted to hold her in his arms. He just wanted to love her. He did mention some, like, you know, one little sexual incident. But again, if you want to hear it from him, then the link to his video stuff is in the notes. Again, some of the things he says, super intense, very triggering. But he said he just wanted her as his companion to help him navigate the world. He looks into the camera and he says, quote, I'm going to send a package. I'm just going to have to kill her. And I'm going to have to kill myself, end quote. He appears completely lucid and cognizant of what he is saying, which makes it all the more terrifying. Something I did find fascinating was that he said he couldn't unalive himself until his mother had died, because losing him would kill her. He says quite plainly to his imagined audience that his mother had a very close attachment to him, and when he talked about the love he knew his mother had for him, he himself, he got a little choked up. Ricardo also spoke on the fact that he had told his brother George that he worked with. George owned the extermination business. He told George that he was going to do something, and then pause, not positive with his life, and that he also wanted to purchase a gun. Needless to say, George got super worried. I think he was even kind of like calling mom and, hey, guess what, Ricardo, oh my gosh, out of love. But Ricardo's racism wasn't reserved for just black people, because there's footage of him ranting and raving about Asian people as well. Just to give you an idea of how very twisted and damaged he was, his handwritten diary contained 168 references to his feelings of failure, 34 references to unaliving himself, and 14 references to flat-out murder. He made 408 references to Bjork and 52 references to other celebrities within the pages. But at any rate, he decided something must be done about the object of his obsession. He decided he would send a package to Bjork that would end her life. The plan was for her to open the package, and within it would be hidden syringes full of HIV-infected blood. Okay, but he changed his mind, knowing how difficult it would be to pull that off, and he decided to send her a bomb instead. It was to consist of a book as the shell, hollowed out, and a device with sulfuric acid. Once the package had been sent and he heard about her demise, bless, Ricardo would then end his own life. The videos take and document in detail the construction of the device intended for Bjork. In the background, one can hear music, TV, and, you know, Ricardo's own monologues. One thing Ricardo did talk about was that he also self-harmed by sticking needles into his upper inner thighs, which is disturbing. But as the tapes go on and, you know, time passes, you can see his descent into his very dark place. Opening shots of him just ominously staring into the camera, nearly, if not completely naked, before he speaks. So, time goes on, as it always does, and he stopped filming himself for a few months. Then he came back. He turns the camera back on. He speaks on the fact that he quit his job working for his brother George's extermination company. This took place in July of 1996. On September 12th, 1996, Ricardo would film his last vlog, if you will. That's what we'll call it. He packaged up the device, the bomb, and he sent it to Bjork's London address. And then after sending the deadly package, he set his video diary to record and he began to make his last wishes. He stripped completely naked, shaved his head, shaved his eyebrows off, then began to paint his face red and green, which some believe was to camouflage himself so taking his own life would be easier. But honestly, who knows? Nobody knows but him. He's not here to explain. He admitted that he was a little nervous, but said for the record that he was not drunk, that he was not depressed, and that he knew exactly what he was doing. Ricardo, again naked, sat down in front of a large sheet of paper, or maybe a canvas, that was behind his head, in which he had written, quote, "the best part of me." It is believed that this was going to be his last art piece, right, in which he would, you know, kaboom with the gun, and then blood and brain matter would splatter the canvas behind him, right? So he begins taking these very deep breaths, nearly to the point of gasping. You know, you think he's almost going to hyperventilate. His eyes get wider and more scared. And then he loudly said, quote, "This is for you," before putting the gun in his mouth, pointed upward, and pulling the trigger. He intended for Bjork and he, you know, to meet up together in heaven. Small problem, though. The gun and the bullet weren't high enough caliber for the bullet to go clean through, if you will. Now, I did force myself to watch it, which wasn't as horrible as I had sort of mentally prepared myself for, but it was still disturbing and extremely hard to watch. You can see the very top of his freshly shaved head have like a sudden kind of upwardly swollen spot, which is obviously the bullet that did not exit the skin. He then grimaces, he groans like you know, like he might have felt some kind of pain. He groans, he falls over. What's the most disturbing thing is the sound of the blood. It's sort of gurgling and babbling out of him like a babbling brook. I know that's really intense and I apologize, but that sound, I don't even think you need to listen to that. It's pretty bad. It took 4 days of Ricardo decomposing before anyone noticed the smell and saw some level of blood coming from within the apartment, I think through the ceiling of the apartment below him, and they contacted the authorities. When the police arrived, they gained entry into the apartment. Aside from the mess and his decomposing corpse, on the wall was this message that he had written that said, quote, "The 8mm videos are documentation of a crime. Terrorist matter. They are for the FBI," end quote. And it was like big letters on the wall that was kind of in front of him, so we didn't see it while he was committing his act because it was behind the camera. The police saw the camera sitting there. They saw there was a tape in it. So of course, they're going to see if something was recorded on it, and there was. So when his final tape was viewed, they realized that he had sent a bomb directly to Bjork. They contacted Scotland Yard in London to warn them of the parcel headed the singer's way. Thank God the package had not yet been delivered and it was safely detonated. Now, it would not have gone to her, you know, front porch, so to speak. She had someone to handle that, but it very well could have hurt that person. You know what I'm saying? Another bit of news Ricardo didn't live long enough to receive was that Bjork and Goldie had split up days before he even did this. Not that Goldie's race even mattered, but you get what I'm saying. So did Bjork ever find out about this? Yeah, she did. Once Bjork learned about what had happened, she did speak to the press, and her empathy was obvious. She stated that it made her quite sad that someone would be in that state and take their own life. She said that people should not, quote, "take me too literally and get involved in my personal life," end quote. But visibly, it is obvious that she was greatly affected by this, and more so than just being terrified for her own life. I did read in a few sources that she watched his video diary entries to get a better understanding of him. And then it was said that she sent this heartfelt card and flowers to Ricardo's family, which I thought to be quite nice. I mean, that wasn't something required, but I just think that that was really sweet. She was already beginning to record a new album, and she decided to finish it in a studio in Spain, kind of away from the public eye. I don't blame her. She had a child as well at that time, and then she wound up hiring security to be with him at all times after this, and quite honestly, I don't blame her at all. Because, you know, a very rare glimpse into me, as a parent who creates publicly available content, especially so with true crime, although clearly not to her level, clearly not to most people's levels, right? But the point is, there are people that listen to me that have sent me some fairly crazy shit, which is why I don't talk a whole lot about my personal stuff for this very reason. I'm not Bjork. Don't take it that way. But regardless, a year after Ricardo's death, Bjork discussed the incident in an interview. She said, quote, "I was very upset that somebody had died. I couldn't sleep for a week. And I'd be lying if I said it didn't scare the fuck out of me, that I could get hurt, and most of all, that my son could get hurt." End quote. It came out after this incident that Ricardo had actually reached out to a psychiatrist to try to help him deal with his obsession, and that psychiatrist stated that they were treating him for anxiety and had zero idea or insight into his plans to end his life. They said they would have never, ever labeled him as dangerous. But the overall theme here is obsession. So what exactly is obsession? I think we all know what it is, but let's sprinkle some actual verifiable knowledge. To some, it is automatically the idea that the person might suffer from like OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. And it's not out of the question, but there are obsessions outside of that specific diagnosis. It isn't always OCD related, is what I'm saying. And when it comes to obsession, I'm not talking about my obsession, this is my air quotes, my obsession with horror movies, or my neurodivergent ass listening to the same freaking three songs from the same one band over and over and over for an embarrassingly long time. Or being a fan of whatever dreamy actor, singer, whatever you want, insert it there. I'm talking about an all-consuming obsession. Obsessions start with thoughts and dreams, you know, wow, so-and-so seems like a cool person. I can really identify with them in whatever way. But then they kind of morph into urges and fantasies. So then you go, you know, I just know that person would like me if they just met me. I can just see us chilling and talking, and I bet we'd never run out of things to talk about. You know, to fantasizing about being wholly physically intimate with them or even having their unwavering attention, devotion, and it gets more intense from there. Obsessions may also feel a bit like intrusive thoughts. So for some people, it's unwelcome thoughts that may be concerning. Most people have the occasional intrusive or unwanted thoughts from time to time. I have them pretty often. Not all intrusive or unwanted thoughts are obsessive, though. But you see where we are going with this. So psychologists are still debating the origins of obsessions in the human mind. However, there are a few current hypotheses on the causes of obsession. So many people who experience obsessions, they show a genetic predisposition to it. One thought is that obsessions may be something that we inherit through our DNA. Other experts think there may be chemical differences within some people's brains that might make you more likely to have obsessions. Environmental factors may also play a role in causing obsessions, and especially if you are experiencing high levels of stress. How many of us are not experiencing high levels of stress? And I know you're asking me, Alyssa, do you think Ricardo was under a tremendous amount of stress? Well, doesn't that all sort of depend on the perspective of the person? My stress that pushes me to the point of dysfunction may look like me just being a whiner to others, vice versa. And I think that I'm lucky enough to have you who are cognizant of that difference, and that helps at least somewhat with how to deal with others. But this is what I see, okay? This is just me. This is what I see. I see a very young man who was born with the extra X chromosome, okay? I think that it affected him physically, obviously, but also mentally, cognitively, emotionally. Of all of the horrible ways he described himself, he put himself down. I just don't think he was all of the adjectives or the descriptive words that he used. He seemed quite reasonably intelligent. His vocabulary was broad, his understanding of everyday things pretty level. He struggled horribly with social awkwardness, and especially so with girls. His love for his family, obvious, unwavering. He was aware of just how much they loved him, and especially his mother, and he actually calmed down and, as I said, got a little choked up when he started talking about her specifically. So now, guys, I kind of want to just be frank with you, okay? I listened to and read other people's commentary and content on this case. Quite frankly, it made me a little sad. All made fun of him with regards to his vlogs. Everyone sort of tutted or scoffed at Ricardo's pain. That doesn't sit well with me. Making fun of someone who is bearing their entire soul and showing that level of vulnerability, even though what he was planning was obviously wrong, horrifying, no, still talking about how boring his speeches were or dismissively making fun of his weight and his looks and all of that. Shameful. Shameful, and especially so from my, quote, colleagues who went to school and got all the fancy letters after their last names, only for me to sit and listen to them or read about them belittle and dismiss his obvious unrest, his agitation, and most importantly, his pain, what he was experiencing. Maybe it wouldn't be so painful for us, horribly painful for him. Okay? Shameful. I'm not excusing what he did, again, and attempted to do all of that. I'm not excusing any of that. It would appear that he sought out help, but a psychiatrist, therapist, clinician, whatever label you want to use, they are only as good as the information they are receiving from their patients, along with careful but not always spot-on observations. To me, I feel like there is sort of a level of intuition with this job. You can, you know, learn and read and memorize everything in the books and pass the tests and become a psychiatrist, psychologist, and what have you. But I do feel like there really needs to be sort of an inborn or very much learned intuition when it comes to observing these kind of people. But the point is that if he was telling his therapist, no, I'm fine, it's just that, the therapist is only as good as the information he's given, okay? I think that he had clinical depression, though he was, again, careful to tell us, his audience, that he was not depressed, and you know, that really isn't uncommon. People who have never experienced clinical, real, dark, deep depression are not able to understand how it feels, and bless them, they can't help it. They have no frame of reference, they can't understand it, okay? I have that kind of depression. A friend of mine who, you know, lucky her, has nothing going on, she's never really had a hard time in her life, like perfect parents, all of that. She has a hard time understanding me when I'm low. She, like so many others, thinks that I should be able to just stop being sad, but I love her anyway because she at least continues to try to understand. We do have to give our loved ones that are trying to understand that extra mile. The rest of us who experience depression know intimately that it is not sadness that we are experiencing, right? It's the emptiness, the hollow shell that is our meat suit, and it is so very heavy. Yet we lug it around in what feels like the bottom of a deep lake, trying to keep up, but walking in deep water is a struggle. And we are somehow overstimulated and understimulated simultaneously, and if we are able to find something to watch, listen to, experience, anything that gives us any glimmer of a distraction from the slow motion torture of every cell in our bodies trying to function, then we will hyperfixate on it. That is like a lifeline. That is a hand coming out to you to pull you out of the well. And in this moment, that is where Ricardo comes in. If it hadn't been Bjork, it would have been someone else. He was an art guy, so that immediately tells us that he was a very visual person. And yet he referred to himself, this is an interesting thing I caught, he refers to himself as a cockroach, and that's what he killed in his job. Wow. Okay. So some bigger sources wanted to label him as schizotypal, out of the kind of cluster A group of personality disorders. I don't necessarily think that I agree. Schizotypal personality disorder displays as, here's your list, having intense social anxiety and poor social relationships, not have close friends or confidants except for first-degree relatives, so parents, siblings, children. Have peculiar behaviors and mannerisms, have odd thoughts and speech, such as using excessively abstract or concrete phrases or using phrases or words in unusual ways. Have unusual perceptive experiences and magical beliefs, such as thinking that they have special paranormal powers. Incorrectly interpret ordinary situations or happenings as having special meaning for them. Being paranoid or suspicious of others' intentions. Have difficulty with responding appropriately to social cues, such as maintaining eye contact. They have a lack of motivation and underachieve in educational and work settings. So a person with STPD generally lacks awareness about how their thoughts and behaviors impact others. So it kind of sounds like it, right? I'm sure a lot of you are going, yeah, that's what it was. Sounds right to me. I don't necessarily think he clinically suffered with this. He was socially awkward and didn't have a lot of social relationships, but he was still social. He didn't have any real particularly peculiar behaviors and mannerisms like schizotypal diagnosed Jeffrey Dahmer, for a perfect example. And he didn't really have odd thoughts and speech, just the self-degradation and self-loathing, but his speech was clear and concise. He made eye contact with the camera. His eyes darted around when he was making little jokes and things, like the mannerisms and the body language that I saw was definitely not in the cluster A, in my opinion. Okay. He didn't seem to have magical beliefs. He had some self-awareness of his obsession and that it was not normal. He knew that. He wasn't paranoid or suspicious of others' intentions. He did seem to lack a bit of motivation and did seem to underachieve. But I believe that this is a self-confidence issue more than an actual personality disorder, if you get the difference. But as I've said a million times, my college degree isn't quite a PhD. So again, it's just my opinion. So just take my opinion as you see fit. But it is important to not lose sight of the meaning of this story. Don't hyperfixate on celebrities. They are just people. Every single one of us has a talent in something. I promise you. Celebrities are no different, and all of the money in the world cannot buy you happiness and peace. It just can't. I used to reside firmly in the camp of, you know, well, they asked for their fame and fortune, and with it, the obsessed fans get over it. But I have an, albeit, you know, half of a fraction of a 10-0 on the right side of the decimal point of an idea of what some celebrity might feel like. You love your art. Whatever medium it is, and you are told that you are talented in it. It makes you happy, so you keep pursuing. All of us, if we had a dream, we would pursue, and especially so when people were hyping us up. You want to share your art with people, and as more and more people enjoy it, you then notice the teeter-totter effect. It does happen. It's slight, but you do start to notice it. This is teeter-totter effect of, you know, I love what I do, but I'm scared someone's going to come after me. That does set in. And you see the troll comments. I get troll comments. You get the scary DMs. I've gotten some pretty scary ones on a much, much smaller scale. Okay. Again, I'm not some celebrity, but on a very, very small scale, I can kind of get it. Okay. What Ricardo was going to do is horrific. I really wish that there could have been some kind of intervention with him long before this happened. But I understand that just the way things were, that just wasn't meant to be. I'm super happy nothing happened to Bjork. We all love her. Bless Bjork. And how sweet of her to send his family a card and flowers. And for her to speak with empathy for him on some level. It's just a level of maturity and love that you don't see so much these days. But what do you guys think about this story? Scary as hell, honestly. But when I was watching him on his tapes, you just get this sense that he was so mean to himself. And I really caught myself I was watching on my laptop, looking at his face on YouTube. And all I wanted to tell him is, you're not a piece of shit. You're not worthless. You know, there was, you see little, like a couple or three, maybe little things of his art, and he did have talent. And I would have said, you do have talent. I will help you apply to art school. It's like, I just wanted to tell him, dude, you're fine. I didn't personally think that he was this, you know, ogre of a unattractive whatever. He seemed okay to me. I don't know. It's empathy. Let me know what you think about this, okay? Just leave me a comment, or you can DM me on Instagram at @serial_killing. You can come join the Facebook fan page that a beloved friend and listener created for me. It's just Serial Killing, a podcast fan page on Facebook. I'm super active on Instagram and Facebook, so those are kind of the best two places. My email is down below because people are starting to send me articles for Monday Morning Murder in the News and the occasional Friday Morning Murder in the News, so you can email me. Email address is in the notes. Outside of that, guys, thank you so much for listening, because I know that you could be listening to anyone else, but you keep choosing me, and I am greatly honored by that. Thank you so much, guys. Have a great day.
Anybody who killed more than two or three people was a mass murderer, and whether it was all at one place or over an extended period of time. And then in the early 80s, they came up with this differentiation called serial killing.